You're listening to True Crime Feed. Welcome to True Crime Feed. I'm your host, Angela Ferrari, reviewing the best true crime podcasts from the past decade with a teensy bit of humor, plus my top three true crime picks of the week. Up first on the docket, a show from the archives I predict you will really enjoy. Let's discuss the case for The Psychic from Swindled. Here's a synopsis from the show page. A self-proclaimed psychic makes a fortune by using her supernatural powers to help solve missing persons cases. Or does she? That's right, today we're talking all about Sylvia Brown. And to take your listening experience to the next dimension, go to thetruecrimefeed.com and sign up for my newsletter, where I curate visual aids to accompany the show. You will see Sylvia rocking her flowy tops on various television appearances through the ages, plus photos and links from cases she consulted on. We have ourselves another iconic episode from Swindled, the podcast that explores true stories of white-collar criminals, con artists, and corporate evil. Hosted by the very mysterious person who goes by the moniker, a concerned citizen. The Psychic originally aired back in 2018, and he goes pretty hard in the paint for Sylvia and psychics in general. But in spite of Swindled and many other critics, Sylvia continues to have a huge fan base even 10 years after her death, gathering new followers after a famous influencer tweeted about Sylvia predicting COVID. Ooh, we'll get there. I remember being reluctant to listen to this episode when it originally aired because even though I didn't know much about Sylvia Brown, I'm still kind of wicked into psychics, you guys. Wait, no, don't hang up. Please hear me out. I know people who have had very powerful, life-changing sessions with mediums. Plus, there's this book called Many Lives, Many Masters. That's one of my favorites, all about hypnotic past life regression. And I concede, I know it all sounds super duper hippy dippy woo woo witchy, but I'll admit I'm here for it, man. But make no mistake, even though I'm open to all kinds of possibilities and frameworks for understanding ourselves and our journey through the universe, I am also very much aware that there are fraudsters out there who exploit these practices, preying on the vulnerable for their own personal gain. So let's take a second look at Sylvia Brown and decide if she was one of those people. Did Swindled get it right? Or did the concerned citizen miss out on a life-changing opportunity to do some deep, meaningful self-discovery, or me-search, if you will, through the healing powers of divine psychic therapy? Let's find out together, friends, and revisit the life and legacy of Sylvia Brown. She was born Sylvia Celeste Shoemaker in 1936 in Kansas City, Missouri. According to Sylvia, her family had a long legacy of psychic abilities that had been passed down generation to generation. Although her mother and father let their innate abilities grow fallow and instead raised Sylvia in a traditional Catholic/Christian household. This was confusing to young Sylvia because as far back as she could remember, starting at the age of 3, she was receiving visions, spiritual messages from the other side. Messages that conflicted with her parents' views. Luckily, she had her maternal grandmother, Ada Coyle, to help her make sense of her psychic gifts. When at age 5, Sylvia accurately predicted the impending deaths of not one, but two of her great-grandmothers, Ada Coyle was not surprised, because Sylvia's Granny Coyle was also a psychic, a renowned clairvoyant that received messages from the other side from her spiritual guide named Athena. Granny Ada Coyle encouraged Sylvia to listen to her own inner spiritual guide named Francine. Ada also revealed to Sylvia that she descended from a long, proud lineage of psychics dating as far back as her great-great-great-grandmother from the 1700s. She also had a great-uncle who was very much into ufology. I think we all have an uncle like that. So little Sylvia takes her Granny Coyle's advice to heart and really hones her psychic skills. She predicts that she'd have a baby sister in 3 years and that her grandfather would die from a heart attack. Both predictions came true. Sylvia was on a roll. By age 23, she was married to her first husband, Gary Dufresne, working as a Catholic school teacher and dabbling with her metaphysical powers on the side. It started with small meetings, tarot readings for friends and family at her house, then to larger meetings at church and community centers, gatherings that grew to 300 plus people. Sylvia also became a strong believer in the Gnostic Christian faith. Gnostic Christians believe in personal spiritual knowledge rather than following Orthodox doctrine, traditions, and religious institutions. Their roots date back as far as the first century when they were denounced by the early fathers of Christianity for being heretics. So yeah, Gnostics have a long, long history of living life on the fringes of society. That's the briefest of overviews I can give you, but this is a fascinating topic to explore. So many subcultures within the counterculture with their own versions of God. The Gnostic Wikipedia page alone had my mind spinning by the time I got to the part about eons, aka spirits in the form of regions of light, aka various emanations of the superior god. I was like, yo, did I accidentally ingest liquid acid again? Ugh, I knew I shouldn't be storing that vial next to my vitamin D drops. By age 37, Sylvia was a mother of two and a full-on professional psychic, authoring several books on the subject and creating her own nonprofit, the Nirvana Foundation for Psychic Research. And she was on husband number two, a man named Kenzel Brown. At this point, Sylvia has helped thousands of people through spiritual guidance. But then things took a turn in the 1980s. In addition to spreading the word about the Gnostic faith and the powers of psychic energy, Sylvia and Kenzel were also spreading the word about an exciting new investment opportunity. You see, Kenzel was the manager of a gold mining venture. Sylvia helped him sell investments, funds that would be put towards the mine's operating costs. The couple even convinced their friends Greg and Robin Cross to shell out $20,000 based on Sylvia's prediction that the mining project would yield them a fortune. But as it turned out, the money somehow ended up going into the bank account of the Nirvana Foundation for Psychic Research. Don't worry, Sylvia. I have silly mix-ups like that all the time. For example, I once attended the Burning Man Festival dosed up on nothing more than liquid vitamin D drops, which was kind of lame, by the way, but my skin and hair looked great. The FBI, however, were not as understanding of Sylvia's little accounting mix-up, and she and Kenzel were indicted in 1992 for grand theft and investment fraud. Sylvia received 1 year probation and 200 hours of community service for her role in the scheme. Though she claimed that Kenzel had been the mastermind behind the whole thing and she had simply been duped because she was unable to use her psychic powers on herself. Bankrupt and looking to rebuild her credibility, it was time for Sylvia to rebrand. She divorced her second husband but kept his last name, adding an E to the end of Brown. Then, Sylvia Brown 2.0 started making the rounds on daytime TV and talk shows, showing off her psychic abilities. including Larry King Live, Jay Leno, The Morning Show with Mike and Juliet, Coast to Coast AM, The Young and the Restless, and of course, Montel Williams. Montel especially launched Sylvia's stardom into the universe. Seemingly, everyone wanted a psychic reading from Sylvia, including the FBI. They supposedly enlisted her help to investigate the 1993 World Trade Center bombing, the Chandra Levy case, and even your boy, Ted Bundy. More on this later. Between consulting with law enforcement and her media appearances, Sylvia Brown was in high demand. Her going rate was over $700 for a 30-minute reading. Combine that with book sales and her foundation, psychic Sylvia was raking in around $3 million a year in 1990s money. That's a whole lot of amethyst crystals and Palo Santo incense, huh, baby? Sylvia made a lot of publicly documented predictions in books, radio, and TV on a variety of topics, such as financial trends, celebrity breakups, and the end of days. Fun stuff like that! Looking back over her long, long career, you can interpret these predictions in many ways. Sometimes she was right, like when she said Madonna would have another kid, but with a different dude. Sometimes Sylvia's forecasts were so vague, it's hard to say if they were accurate, but she would still like to take full credit. Like when she claimed to solve the ski mask rapist case. In the 1980s, an unknown assailant was assaulting women in the Bay Area. Sylvia predicted that his last name would start with an S, and he probably worked for the city. Eventually, a sewer maintenance man named George Anthony Sanchez was arrested for the crimes. All right, Sylvia, good guess, but let's at least admit it was a group effort, babe. I'd totally be cool if she just stayed in this lane, but then Sylvia starts consulting on missing children's cases. And more than just a few times, her very detailed and very inaccurate predictions had devastating consequences. In 1999, in Fort Worth, Texas, a 6-year-old girl named Opal Jo Jennings was living at her grandparents' house. And one day, she was playing outside in the yard with her cousin when a man pulled up in a truck and kidnapped her. Opal Jo Jennings had vanished without a trace, and police had no leads. So Opal's grandmother goes on the Montel Williams show and pleads for help from psychic Sylvia Brown. She is desperate for any information, and Sylvia confidently delivers the following message in her deep, gravelly voice.
She's not dead. For some reason, she was taken and put into some kind of slavery thing, taken into Japan. The place is Kokoro.
She goes on to describe a nightmare scenario where this little girl was sold into sex slavery in some faraway land. As you can imagine, this would give Opal's family no peace. They now believe their beloved granddaughter was still alive, but suffering a fate worse than death. They felt so helpless, it was a nightmare for the family. And worst of all, none of it was true. Mercifully, a few months later, Fort Worth investigators arrested a child molester named Richard Lee Franks and tied him to the kidnapping and murder of Opal Jo Jennings. Opal had been killed just hours after her abduction. Richard Lee Franks led investigators to her remains, located about 13 miles away from her grandparents' house, and not in Kokoro, Japan, which isn't even a real place, you guys. Like, WTF, Montel, I know you all didn't have Google back then, but it still wasn't impossible to fact-check a map. You could even do it on a commercial break. So it's a good thing Sylvia Brown doesn't make any more wildly inaccurate predictions to grieving and desperate families about their missing children, right? You may not be a psychic, but you know exactly where this is going. In 2002, Gwen Crewson goes on Montel's show, desperate to ask psychic Sylvia Brown for answers about her missing adult daughter, Holly. And Sylvia tells this mother that Holly was still alive and working as a stripper in L.A. In response, Gwen Crewson drops everything and spends weeks scouring seedy clubs all around Los Angeles, pleading with dancers and bartenders, passing out pictures of her missing daughter, Holly. There was no trace of her anywhere. Probably because Holly had already been dead for months, her body lying unidentified in a morgue in San Diego. But don't worry, you guys. Sylvia wasn't just giving parents false hope that their deceased children were still alive. No, sometimes she told them their kids were dead when they were still very much alive and in desperate need of rescuing. In 2002, in Richwood, Missouri, 11-year-old Sean Hornbeck was last seen riding his bike over to his friend's house when he disappeared. His parents, clamoring for answers, go on the Montel Williams show. Noticing a pattern here? Pleading with Sylvia Brown for any information. And again, she made a confident proclamation, telling these parents that their beloved son Sean had been abducted and killed by a dark-skinned man with dreadlocks. As you can imagine, this was a huge blow to the parents and the rescue team hoping to find Sean Hornbeck alive. The case went cold for over 4 years. Until another young Missouri boy went missing. 13-year-old Ben Owenby. An eyewitness led police to their prime suspect named Michael Delvin. 4 days after Ownby's abduction, police searched Delvin's apartment and found Ben Ownby and Sean Hornbeck both alive. In 2007, Delvin was sentenced to 74 life sentences plus 2,020 years. Oh, and by the way, his skin is pale white and his hair is super short and wispy. So you'd think Sylvia would maybe take a time out, you know, have a meeting on the mound with her spirit guide, maybe even consider pulling Francine from the game. Cause this is a real bad look, Sylvia. If you're gonna make wild predictions on live air, probably best to stick with the celebrity gossip and financial predictions, right? Sylvia? Sylvia! Oh God, she's back on Montel, you guys. This time it's 2003 and it's a woman named Luana Miller who is imploring famed psychic Sylvia Brown for help. And this is the worst one yet. It's about to get real dark, so feel free to skip a few minutes if you're not up for it. Okay, so Luana Miller's 17-year-old daughter, Amanda Berry, went missing a year earlier in Cleveland, Ohio. Amanda was last seen leaving her job at Burger King. And when her family sounded the alarm, police figured she was just a runaway and didn't give the case much credence. That was until an anonymous man called Barry's parents from her cell phone and said, quote,
"I have Amanda. She's fine and will be coming home in a couple of days."
But Amanda never came home. About a year after her disappearance, another teenage girl named Gina DeSouz also went missing from the Cleveland area. The missing girls' cases were thought to be linked, but that's all the info the FBI had for the families at that point. So Amanda Berry's distraught mother, Luana Miller, went on Oprah and Montel Williams to help get the word out about her missing daughter, in the hopes to bring her home. What she got was a nightmare prophecy from Sylvia Brown.
"She's not alive, honey."
This news crushed Luana. When asked where Barry's body was, Sylvia says it was somewhere in water. Finally, Luana asked if she would ever see her daughter again. Sylvia replied,
"Yeah, in heaven, on the other side."
Luana was devastated. She starts taking down photos of her missing daughter and giving away her possessions. Then, in 2006, Luana Miller passed away from heart failure. Meanwhile, Amanda Berry, Gina De Jesus, and another Cleveland woman who had gone missing in 2002 named Michelle Knight were all being held captive by a man named Ariel Castro at his home in the West Side neighborhood of Tremont. Castro also happened to be a bus driver who transported preschool-aged children, by the way. And for 10 years, these three women endured unspeakable things, hell on earth at the hands of this monster. Despite calls from the neighbors about suspicious activity in the Castro home and even a house call from the cops, Amanda, Gina, and Michelle were held captive. Until one harrowing day, Amanda Berry managed to escape with her now 6-year-old daughter, a result of being raped by Ariel Castro. It was 2013, and now 4 total victims were finally free. And that's when Amanda Berry first learned about her mother's passing 6 years earlier. Later on, Amanda Berry watches that episode of Montel Williams with her late mother and Sylvia Brown telling her that there was no hope her daughter was dead. In an interview with ABC News, Amanda Berry recalled this incident, saying, "I just broke down crying because I couldn't believe Sylvia said that. And then my mom broke down crying, so that hurt even worse." Yeah, I told you, this gets dark. There's a lot of blame to go around. I'm definitely side-eyeing Montel Williams. But man, dude, Sylvia Brown, she really knows how to put the psych in psychic. But wait, there's more. Your girl downtown Sylvia Brown wasn't just making erroneous predictions about missing children. This celebrity psychic was even spraying her false prophecies about grandmothers. Again, it's the early 2000s, and again, we're on the Montel Williams show. Only this time, a family is asking for help locating their missing grandmother named Linda McClelland. Sylvia told Linda's daughter that this beloved grandmother was still alive somewhere in Orlando and was being held captive by a man with the initials MJ. When in actuality, Linda McClelland had been strangled to death by her son-in-law named David Rapaski. Oh, and did I mention that Rapaski had been in attendance during Sylvia's psychic reading on the Montel Williams show? When confronted about all of these very public, proven false prophecies, Sylvia's reply was,
"Only God is right 100% of the time."
Well, I can't tell you Sylvia's exact error rate. In total, I came across 24 documented missing person cases that Sylvia publicly made predictions about that verifiably turned out to be wrong. Again, she had a long, long career and made tons of documented projections. Of course she's going to be wrong about some things. But we're not talking about the weather forecast here. We're talking about grieving, desperate family members searching for answers about their missing loved ones. So at this point, here are 3 things that I trust to be more accurate than a psychic reading from Sylvia Brown. Number 3, one of those folded paper fortune teller / cootie catchers you made back in grade school. Number 2, mean girl Karen Smith harnessing the power of her breasts to decipher if it is in fact raining. And number 1, my iPhone. It's the weirdest thing, you guys. I'll be chatting with a friend about, like, I wonder if they make stiletto roller skates. And the next thing I know, when I glance at my phone, I see an ad for Saint Laurent Black Velvet Strauss Crystal Embellished Roller Heels. Wow, amazing. And not at all a creepy example of the dystopic reality we're currently all living through. Anyway. Despite all of these other more accurate ways of psychically collecting information, daytime TV and talk show fans alike were obsessed with Sylvia Brown. On January 2nd, 2006, she goes live on the air on Coast to Coast AM with George Noory. This was just as the news was breaking about the Sago coal mine explosion in West Virginia. This event honestly deserves its own podcast episode. The mining operation had been cited 208 times the prior year for violating regulations. 96 of those citations were considered significant or substantial. And just 3 weeks before the explosion, a miner named Randall McCloy recalled discovering a gas pocket which tested positive for methane. He shut the area down and reported it to his superiors. The following day, he said that the area was reopened and the leak had been plugged with some glue that was normally used for bolts. 3 weeks later, there was a methane gas explosion, which trapped 13 miners. The news broke and the media was clamoring for answers. There were conflicting initial reports, some outlets claiming that 12 of the 13 miners were still alive and a rescue mission was underway. Others reported that there was no noise coming from inside the mine and therefore survivors were unlikely. Coast to Coast George Norrie asked Sylvia to decipher the conflicting reports.
No, I knew they were going to be found. I hate people that say something after the fact. It's just like when I knew that the Pope was dead.
They continue on with the program, Sylvia fielding questions from the audience. Then, a short while later, news broke that 12 of the 13 miners had tragically perished, and Randall McCloy was the lone survivor. Sylvia was again asked live on the air to respond to the breaking news.
I don't think there's anybody alive, maybe one. How crazy for them to report that they were alive when they weren't. I just don't think they're alive.
Commence awkward silence and commercial break. Yeah, you would have thought this would have been the end of her career as a psychic, right? Nope, her popularity only grew. Sylvia Brown is truly an example of all press is good press. By 2007, there was a 4-year waiting list to book a $700 call with Sylvia for psychic readings. She had several books on the New York Times bestseller list, and she was even headlining her own cruise. The author and podcaster John Ronson boarded the Sylvia Brown cruise and wrote all about it in a 2007 article for The Guardian, which I will link to in the newsletter. Criticism of Sylvia and other celebrity psychics was also growing. A computer programmer turned skeptical activist named Robert Lancaster launched the StopSylviaBrown.com website, detailing every time Sylvia's public predictions had been proven wrong. Another skeptic slash retired stage magician named James Randi went on Larry King Live and challenged Sylvia to demonstrate her abilities in a controlled scientific environment to prove she truly had psychic powers once and for all. The ex-magician even sweetened the pot by shucking out $1 million, setting aside that money in an escrow account. Sylvia's response was vague at first. She said she refused to do the demonstration because Randy didn't really set aside the money, but Randy had receipts, a notarized copy of the escrow account status showing $1 million. And he showed that he had sent the offer to Sylvia via certified mail, but she refused to sign. Later, Sylvia Brown's manager goes on Anderson Cooper 360 and tells the Coop, essentially, that Sylvia is too good for the ex-magician James Randi's dumb double dare. As for her final act, even though supposedly her powers didn't work on herself, Sylvia Brown tells Larry King that she will die at the age of 88. Sylvia Brown did pass away from a heart attack in 2013 at the age of 77. She was survived by her 2 sons and her 4th husband. Since the original Swindled episode aired back in 2018, Sylvia continues to make the news. In 2019, there was a massive expose in the New York Times all about unmasking famous psychics and their deceitful practices, including the deceased Sylvia Brown, led by a skeptic named Susan Gerbic, who referred to psychic celebrities as, quote, grief vampires. There was also an FBI FOIA request made public on the Skeptical Inquirer showing that, contrary to Sylvia's claims of working with the FBI, helping to consult on those major cases like the 93 World Trade Center bombing, the Chandra Levy case, and further murders linked to Ted Bundy, there was not a single FBI file connecting Sylvia Brown to any case. The only FBI file that ever had her name on it was for her 1992 fraud conviction. But Sylvia's image gets another rebrand and a huge swath of new followers when none other than Kim Kardashian tweeted praise of the late Sylvia's psychic powers. You see, Kim K and many others were blown away by Sylvia Brown predicting the global coronavirus pandemic in 2020. In her best-selling 2008 book, End of Days, Predictions and Prophecies About the End of the World, Sylvia Brown wrote, quote,
"In around 2020, a severe pneumonia-like illness will spread through the globe, attacking the lungs and bronchial tubes, resisting all known treatments."
Sylvia Brown's book sales surged, cracking the top 10 once again. Whew, okay, after all that, here's where I land. I still believe in psychic abilities. I even believe that at one point, Sylvia Brown had those abilities, especially in her childhood. But somewhere along her way to fame, she lost them. If these powers are divine gifts meant to help people on their spiritual quests, and if Sylvia Brown stopped caring about helping others and instead started focusing on personal wealth, maybe her spiritual guide, Francine, peaced out after her 8th appearance on the Montel Williams Show. When researching this episode, I came across Sylvia's website. It's still up and now being run by her son, Chris Dufresne. He also runs the Facebook group with over 300,000 devoted members. Members who write comments expressing how much his late mother, Sylvia, changed their life for the better. There are also people whose lives were damaged by her words. Both realities exist at the same time. You know, maybe we're all just spiritual beings having a human experience, and to be human is to be flawed. All we can really do is measure our lives by the lessons we learn and the tasks we complete. So I'm learning to cultivate my own innate, divine, psychic intuition. After all, I knew you'd listen to this episode. Whew, my goddess, this one kinda had me shooketh. Definitely interesting to revisit this original Swindled episode. I agree with a lot of the concerned citizens' sentiments on Sylvia Brown, but I do think his overall takedown of psychic powers as a whole was a little short-sighted, if you will. Let me know your thoughts all about Sylvia Brown. You can contact me telepathically or email me directly at angela@thetruecrimefeed.com. Or join the True Crime Feed Facebook discussion group. If we've learned anything from today's episode, it's that to keep an open mind, but don't be so open-minded that your brain falls out. And as always, be kind to fellow True Crime Feed and psychic friends. Stay tuned till after the break to hear my top 3 podcast power ranking of the week. Ah, hey you. I'm so glad we found each other and get to share our special love for true crime podcasts. I don't ever want you to miss out on a wild story. That would be a crime in itself. So be sure to hit that follow or subscribe button on your podcast app and share your favorite episode with a friend so the next time you see each other, you can splurge about your latest true crime obsession. Thanks for spreading the word, and now back to the show. And we're back. Before we start the ranking, all right, I've heard a lot of good things about Media Pressure, the new podcast about the Maura Murray case as told by her family. I was hesitant because I've spent so much time agonizing about that case. The more details I've learned, the more I'm baffled. But I'm going to give it a listen for you, dear listener, and report back to let you know if it's worth your investment. I am also excited / nervous to check out The Rise and Fall of Ruby Frank. Excited because of the subject matter, exploring the dark side of momfluencers, and nervous because this one's coming from Wondery and their shows have been soups hit or miss lately. So I will keep you abreast of my thoughts and feels about these trending pods. And now here are the three shows currently trending that I think are worth a listen. I present to you this week's podcast power ranking. At the number three spot, we have Varmintown. Here's a reminder from the show page. 2 years ago, Kyle MacLachlan, the star of Twin Peaks, called investigative journalist Joshua Davis with a strange story. Kyle had heard a rumor that Pablo Escobar did a deal in the early 1980s with a remote coastal southern town of 300 people. In exchange for vast wealth and limitless cocaine, Escobar would be allowed to land planes and ships in the area. Over the last 24 months, Josh and Kyle investigated the rumor, journeying to Varmintown to knock on doors and find out what really happens when a fire hose of money and cocaine is turned on a small, tight-knit community. I just finished episode 6 titled Attack Turkeys, and yes, it's as funny as it sounds. Seriously, this cast of characters is straight out of a Coen Brothers movie. I could watch an entire miniseries just about the Taiwanese pilot named Chang. My only knock on the show, besides the exorbitant amount of ads, is that there is a huge cast of characters and it can be difficult to keep straight from week to week. So this show is a great candidate for a binge-listen road trip. Because you are in for a wild ride when you set your GPS to Varnumtown. At the number two spot, we have Murder 101. Here's a summary from the show page. In a small Tennessee town, a local serial killer was caught by the most unlikely investigators. A group of high school students led by their teacher, Alex Campbell. Throughout the course of one school semester, the class pieced together a 30-year-old mystery and identified the killer behind at least 6 brutal murders. Shockingly, while the Tennessee Bureau of Investigators publicly agrees with their theory, no charges have been filed against the murderer. While some sleuthing students already have graduated, they, along with a fresh crop of current high schoolers, still want to finish the assignment once and for all. There is an unforgettable detail in a recent episode that I want to highlight. A TBI agent informed Alex Campbell that they will never know the true number of victims because a coroner admitted to this agent that if there was any sign of drug use, they used to mark these women's cause of death as a drug overdose, even if there were clearly signs of strangulation. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't be shocked at this point. There are some skippable parts in Murder 101. The knot talk goes on a little long for me, but what makes this show a must listen is the Alex Campbell interview with the only known survivor of the Bible Belt killer. The whole time this woman is speaking, I just want to reach out and give her a hug. I hope this project is healing for her too, and that more families can find closure through Murder 101. And at the number one spot, we once again have Hello, John Doe. Here's a rundown from the show page. At age 45, Steve Patterson made a shocking online discovery. His own missing persons page. Desperate to uncover why he had been included on the list, Steve called Todd Matthews, a missing persons investigator, in search of answers. Together, Todd and Steve discover a sordid family past that includes long-lost relatives, kidnappings, and murders. Hello, John Doe is a winding, poignant tale that explores what it means to be lost and found. Ugh, I was worried that I overhyped this show based on my enjoyment of the first two episodes, but yo, it just keeps getting better. I could listen to Todd Matthews narrate the phone book, although actually that phrase is kind of outdated. How about this? I could listen to Todd Matthews read Apple's entire terms and conditions agreement. He's that good of a narrator. We have the honor of having Todd at the helm of an astounding investigation, decades in the making. Do not miss the achievement of Hello, John Doe. Now for my miss of the week. We have The Raven. Here's a synopsis from the show page. On January 31st, 2000, just hours after Super Bowl 34, Baltimore Ravens star linebacker Ray Lewis and a group of friends got in an altercation outside of a club in Atlanta's affluent Buckhead neighborhood. Within seconds, two men were dead in the street. Lewis and two friends were charged with murder. A media frenzy ensued, but in the end, all three defendants walked free. Less than a year after the killings, Lewis became a Super Bowl champion, and he's made millions on and off the field since 2000, always professing his innocence. But the victims' families still believe there's more to the story. This one's such a bummer because I loved the beginning and I was such a huge fan of the podcast host, Tim Livingston, after his show, The Whistleblower. But The Raven ended up being a huge flop. It seemed to just drudge up a lot of pain for everyone involved just to end up in the same exact spot they started. I mean, yeah, parts of the investigation were interesting, but the lack of resolution really sucked the air out of the football. Tim Livingston, I wish you well on your next venture. Please choose a sports crime topic with a better closer. Because for now, I'm cutting The Raven from the roster and sending it down my podcast queue trapdoor. Find out next week if Hello, John Doe will continue to dominate the number one spot as the series continues, or if a new show will make a dramatic upset and take its place. Let me know what trending shows are in your top three and what show fell through your podcast queue trapdoor. I'll meet you back here next week to dust off another superb true crime show from the archive for your next feeding fix. That's all for today's True Crime Feed. Don't forget to sign up for my weekly newsletter where I post links to my top three favorite shows of the week and bring you fabulous visual aids for every episode. Be sure to follow the show on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook to join the conversation. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and tell your fellow partners in crime to tune in to True Crime Feed. Thanks for riding along and allowing me to be your audio accomplice. Join me next week for another feed-in.